Some of this is going to be a little bit repetitive. What I'm going to do, because we each have a little bit more time, I'm going to talk about our reproductive health advocacy and the context of our larger advocacy work on behalf of girls. And then after about 15 minutes, I'm going to show a 7-minute video that highlights a case study of one of our partners in Liberia and their successful work to pass a national law for children's rights. So it won't be all PowerPoint, and I'm going to have to try to leave a little bit of space at the end if anyone has questions or comments about either the presentation or the video. So right now we're doing budgetary advocacy, but we're doing that in the context of general advocacy. As the facilitator mentioned, this program that I work on is AGALI. It's the Adolescent Girls Advocacy and Leadership Initiative, and we're based here in the Bay Area. I'm going to talk about budgetary advocacy in sub-Saharan Africa and also give you a larger context of our work in Latin America and in sub-Saharan Africa. So just to give you a little bit of background about why we do the work that we do, there's been a lot of attention increasing over the last 5 to 10 years in working on adolescent girls' issues, precisely because they are such a marginalized demographic around the world. There are between 600 and 750 million adolescent girls around the world, and at least a quarter live in extreme poverty. Over half of them are out of school, and they face a variety of reproductive and sexual health challenges, in addition to lack of access to education and protections for their rights. In spite of this, less than 2 cents of every dollar that goes to international funding goes to programs for girls. So there's still a huge need for increased investment from NGOs and from the governments in a lot of these countries to work specifically with girls. So a lot of this increased interest over the last 5 to 10 years in working on girls' issues has come from the recognition that adolescent girls represent a huge and very powerful opportunity for improving the development of communities and families. They reinvest a lot more of their income when they are educated and have access to livelihoods than boys of their same age, and investing in them can really improve the overall GDP, as you can see from the example in Malawi. It has a huge economic multiplier effect when you invest in adolescent girls. That's some of the things that have been spurring programs like AGALI to focus specifically on girls. So a little bit of background on our work. As I mentioned, we're based here in the Bay Area at PHI in Oakland. We mainly partner with the UN Foundation and a few smaller family foundations here in the U.S. And our focus countries are determined in conjunction with the UN Foundation. And right now we're working in 5 countries. So those are Liberia, Malawi, Ethiopia, Guatemala, and Honduras. Those are countries that have been chosen because of the high need for investment in girls and also the social and political opportunities for making those changes. So AGALI, overall, what we do is we work with senior civil society, government, and multilateral leaders, so adults above the age of 18, who work directly with adolescent girls in some capacity. Those can be directors of an NGO, people who work in the Ministry of Gender at the national level, local advocates for indigenous rights. It really varies. You can see there's a few pictures of some of our AGALI fellows here. The woman on the left is actually a rock star in Ethiopia, and she used her participation in AGALI to raise the profile of adolescent girls in Ethiopia during promo events and concerts and helps get the word out about the need to invest more in adolescent girls. And on the right, there's a couple fellows, one from Guatemala and one from Honduras, who both work at the local grassroots level on indigenous girls' health and rights. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of how broad the range of people who participate in our programs are. So here you can see a list of the strategies that we use when we're working with these leaders and with girls. Before I talk about the results of some of our fellows and their organizations' work, I'd like to just go through briefly some of these strategies. So when someone is selected to participate in AGALI as a fellow, the first thing that they do is go through an intensive 7-day capacity building workshop in their country that focuses on helping them learn some of the specifics in terms of the legal and policy framework in their countries and how that affects girls, to get a deeper understanding and a shared background among the group of what the key issues are facing girls. Because although there are some commonalities in a lot of the countries we work, there are also very specific local and regional issues. And then during the second half of the training, the fellows participate in a facilitated process whereby with our trainers and with us, they actually develop a proposal to do advocacy work on behalf of girls. So considering whatever work they do already in their organization, be it girls' education, livelihoods, human rights, we help them develop a proposal that they finish by the end of the training, they can take with them. And we really focus on helping them move from theory to practice. And with that in mind, once they have this proposal and we help them finalize it, we are able to give seed grants to implement the strongest of those proposals. So we, at this point, have funded over 40 different advocacy projects in the countries where we work. And for both the projects that we fund and the ones that don't receive our funding, we help them polish up their proposals and submit them to other organizations for funding. I won't go through our technical assistance process in too much detail, but once someone joins the EGALI program as a fellow, they're eligible to get all sorts of support on an individual and organizational level in terms of proposal development, working on advocacy strategies, networking, fundraising, and really whatever they need to improve their advocacy for girls' rights. We also find it's really important to bring the fellows back together after they've gone through the main training of EGALI. And so every 6 months to a year after the main training that they participate in, we bring them and any other fellows from their country in from different years back together for 2 to 3 day workshops where they have a chance to share lessons learned and some of their experience actually doing their advocacy projects and then learn more about a specific area of advocacy, whether it is media advocacy, budgetary advocacy, which I'll talk more about in a minute, girls' economic empowerment, or a range of topics. And we found that this is really key to strengthening the network that people feel and the support that they have in terms of feeling like they have allies in the fight for girls' rights. We also, because our reach in terms of the actual EGALI fellows is fairly limited, we support them to do trainings and outreach work for girls and local community organizations where they work. So on the right, there's a group of young Liberian teenagers who participated in an advocacy and sexual and reproductive health rights training with two of our fellows. And you can see one of them's holding up a training certificate. So these trainings that they do with our support range from, you know, a couple hours talk at a school to a several month process with a group of girls or a community organization to really strengthen their understanding of what advocacy is, what a rights-based approach means, and how they can be more involved at the grassroots level in this advocacy work. And last, our last strategy is really something that's come about in the last couple of years, recognizing that there is a fairly large gap in terms of access to policy information and awareness of adolescent girls' issues in the broader community where we work. So we have been addressing that through a variety of strategies, which include policy briefs, case studies that we're publishing this year, and video and media advocacy. The policy briefs are something that we recognized over the course of the last several years of implementing the program that very difficult in many cases to actually access copies, either electronically or hard copies, of policies and laws in many of the countries where we work. And so we were able to obtain copies of the policies that most affect girls and produce 2 to 3 page briefs that highlight in non-legalese the policies and what the different components are so that our fellows and other advocates can use them in lobbying and other advocacy work where they need to directly cite specific parts of the law or increase understanding of what is actually required under the law. I am going to show you an example of the video advocacy that we do, so I'm not going to talk about that too much now, but we have a variety of advocacy videos that we've produced or supported that are on the EGALI website if you're interested in seeing those. I'm going to skip over this in general, but this is our model, and so if you're interested in knowing more about the nuts and bolts of the program, this model is on our website as well for download, but basically these boxes at the top are the components of EGALI, and these are the outcomes in the down arrow that we hold ourselves accountable for. So one of the things that we have recognized over the last three or four years, is a greater need not just for advocacy for new policies and programs or implementation of policies and programs for girls, but a real gap in terms of a need for budgetary advocacy. So something that a lot of our fellows were hearing when they were meeting directly with decision makers was that, oh, there's, you know, this policy is there, but there's no money in our budget to support it. And so what we have started to do in two of the countries where we work, in Malawi and Guatemala, is to help give our fellows the skills and the tools that they need to understand how to look at government budgets, to encourage government transparency, and to be able to follow the money trail and understand why money is going to certain areas and not others, and to be able to really more effectively advocate for improved budgets for adolescent girls, because without those increases in funding, most of the policies that they have been working on will not be fully implemented. So that's something that's ongoing right now, and in Malawi we've been able to provide seed funding for improving reproductive health focused budgeting in local communities that are impacted highly by HIV/AIDS. We're hoping to have our first results from that budgetary work at the end of this year. In Guatemala, we've been working with an organization in Quetzaltenango, which is the second largest city in the country, with some rural outlying areas that are primarily indigenous Maya, with an organization that builds in indigenous girls' capacity to actually participate in the democratic process. And these girls have been able to come up with a series of public policies that would benefit them and advocate directly with the mayor of their communities to assign money to implement those proposals. So that's something that we are working to scale up at this point in Guatemala to improve that local implementation of sexual and reproductive health policies. So I just want to talk before we move into the video a little bit about our program achievements and some of the successes that our fellows have had advocating for girls. We currently have 89 fellows in Sub-Saharan Africa and Latin America, and as I mentioned, they do a lot of dissemination and outreach training with girls and other groups, and they've been able to reach over 40,000 girls so far during the lifetime of EGALI with these direct service and training programs. So they've really been able to leverage what they've learned and expand a lot in terms of community participation and understanding of what advocacy is. So just to talk briefly about some of the Latin America and Africa advocacy results. As I mentioned, we work mainly with direct service organizations, and the seed grants that we provide are generally around $10,000. So we have been very pleased to see that a lot of the organizations have been able to take the skills that they've learned and the limited support in terms of financial investment and advocate successfully for the passage of national laws and policies. In Guatemala, most of these laws and policies focus on violence, gender-based violence, and sexual and reproductive health service. And you can see there's a variety here that include the passage of two national policies to promote teen pregnancy prevention and improved pregnancy and postpartum service for girls and teen mothers. So that's something that's been ongoing, and also include, as I mentioned, the Indigenous Girls Budgetary Advocacy Program model. In Honduras, we're supporting a lot of budgetary advocacy work around a ministerial declaration called Prevention Through Education that looks at implementing appropriate sex education in schools through the ninth grade. And I'll talk briefly in a few minutes about the coalition there that's working on that. In Africa, we've had similar pleasant surprises in terms of the ability of these organizations to create that national change in a fairly short time. So the video I'm going to show you highlights the work of two organizations in Liberia to pass the national children's law there. And that's something that had just been sitting idle and had encountered a lot of resistance, and they were able to reinvigorate the debate around the issue and advocate for that law to be passed within the period of only a year. So I'm excited to show that to you as well. In Malawi right now, a lot of the work that we're supporting is sexual and reproductive health focused, with a specific focus on child marriage. That's a huge issue there. Almost half of women and young girls in Malawi are married by the age of 18, about 47%. So we're working with our partners there to advocate to increase the age of marriage from 15 to 18, and then to get buy-in and understanding from chiefs and traditional authorities, so that at the local level, they are not supporting customary marriage of anyone under 18. So it's a top-down and bottom-up strategy. We're hoping by the end of the year, actually, we'll be able to see a revised marriage law that's going to be passed there that will raise the age of marriage to 18. Well, it looks like I'm missing a slide. but what I want to do now is just, as I mentioned, the video that I want to show you highlights the work in Liberia. And it's not specifically reproductive health focused, but the law that these two organizations advocated to pass is a domestication of the CRC, the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And so that includes a variety of protections for children in general in terms of their right to education, healthcare, sexual and reproductive health information, and then specifically a lot of protections for girls around freedom from FGM and other harmful traditional practices, and a lot of protections in terms of their right to education specific to girls. Is that something that has been a serious problem in the post-war period in Liberia? So I'm going to show the video now. It's about 7 minutes, and then if you have any questions about the presentation or the video when I'm finished, I'd be happy to talk more.